Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack on the United States Capitol. Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women, and we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them, because you'll never take back our country with weakness.
The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defiled the seat of American democracy. To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. We love you. You're very special. And to those who broke the law, you will pay. Go home and go home in peace. We have just been through an intense election and emotions are high. But now tempers must be cooled and calm restored.
Today is not the end. It's just the beginning.
We must get on with the business of America. My campaign vigorously pursued every legal avenue to contest the election results.
Mike Pence is going to have to come through for us.
Now Congress has certified the results. A new administration will be inaugurated on January 20th. My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power.
We will never give up. We will never concede.
That is a man who 2 days ago preached the gospel of insurrection against the United States of America and against the United States Constitution that he actually swore an oath to uphold. Rudy Giuliani, 2 days ago, was talking about combat justice and how they needed to rush up to Capitol Hill and apply combat justice. Don Trump Jr. talked about the fact that they were coming after members of Congress. We're coming to get you, and it's going to be fun. Insurrection 2 days ago. Now, there are investigations into whether the sitting president of the United States was guilty of insurrection against the United States of America. They need to make sure they do the same with Rudy Giuliani and Don Trump Jr., because just looking at the face of the statute, they are guilty of being a part of a conspiracy to commit insurrection against the United States of America. And no puff piece, no script written by terrified staff who saw their world crumbling before them can change that fact. He, his son, and Rudy Giuliani are guilty of insurrection. They should be arrested. Said it yesterday. They should be booked and they should be sent to jail. If we are a nation of laws, that's exactly what will happen.
And this was an insurrection, Willie, which left one woman dead and many others injured. This insurrection desecrated the United States Capitol, the People's House, and interrupted democracy in action.
Well, and now, Mika, a police officer is dead. A Capitol Hill police officer named Brian Sicknick was killed by the mob with a fire extinguisher. So the mobs that the president inspired with his rhetoric all along, and especially with his rhetoric that morning as he told them to go to the Capitol, that mob killed a Capitol police officer. Oh. So you had a woman shot inside the Capitol, just outside the chamber doors where the House and the Senate were sitting, where the vice president was, by the way. The president sent the mob up where his vice president was, and a police officer is now dead. Many others are injured. Mm. So that speech yesterday that was written and plugged into the teleprompter is empty. It means nothing. It's beyond too little. It's beyond too late.
So is that the mob justice? Is that the combat justice that Rudy Giuliani, former prosecutor himself, was talking about? He urged the crowd on to show combat justice, and a police officer is dead. One of the rioters is dead. That blood, of course, as both major newspapers in Missouri have said, that blood is not only on Donald Trump's hands and Rudy Giuliani's hands and the hands of Donald Trump Jr., it's also in the hands of Josh Hawley, Mika, who now the man who started actually the legislative side of this, that man who refused to back down even after open insurrection against the United States of America, he is now being called on to resign from the United States Congress because of the crimes he has committed
against
America.
He also lost his book deal. The publisher that was going to publish his upcoming book has pulled out. It is just another consequence to what appears to be just violent criminal action.
And proving once again, Willie, that he just may well be the dumbest man in America with a degree from Stanford and Yale Law School. Josh Hawley, as he did with Facebook and he did with social media platforms, he's doing now with a publisher. He keeps confusing the actions of private industry, of private enterprises with the federal government. He keeps confusing the fact that if you are a profit-making center, you can do what the hell you want to do as far as publishing, because the First Amendment grants you that right. You can do what the hell you want to do with who you sign up to write a book. And by the way, if in the middle of that contract, like let's say I have a contract to write a book on Lincoln. Let's say between now and then, I decide to commit treason against the United States of America. I decide to commit acts of sedition like Josh Hawley did. I decide to lead an insurrection against the United States of America and inspire actually the ravaging of the United States Capitol and the trashing of the U.S. Constitution. Yeah, I think my publisher has a right to cancel my deal, too. That's not the First Amendment, actually. Joshy boy, go back to school. That's free enterprise at work.
Yeah, for people who don't know, he had a book deal. Simon & Schuster, his publisher, canceled the book deal after what it saw over the last couple of days. And then he put out a statement yesterday condemning cancel culture and calling it a violation of the First Amendment. Again, a private entity canceling a book deal, of course, is not a violation of the First Amendment. But the problem is, like with his argument in the Senate the other night, is of course he knows the difference. Of course he knows better. It makes it all the more cynical and all the more worse. The book deal is a small microcosm of his larger issue, which is that he knows exactly what he's doing, and it's a cynical play for his own ambition.
Oh, and I mean, that reaction is spoiled, entitled, and unbelievably unself-aware. I can't believe he has to learn this lesson on the national stage with blood on his hands. Along with Joe, Willie, and me, we have White House reporter for the Associated Press, Jonathan Lemire, White House editor for Politico, Sam Stein, NBC News Capitol Hill correspondent and host of Way Too Early, Casey Hunt, and senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, David Drucker. So, great to have you all on board.
So, Jonathan Lemire, let's just go to you first. Give us a quick overview. What, you know, this is, again, this is like Bill Murray in Tootsie, when he's walking away from the theater with other playwrights and said, when my play's over, I want people to look around and ask the question, what happened? Well, in the Trump reality show, we were just starting to read a Vanity Fair article, and we're getting through it on
it was a nice evening.
Jared and Ivanka.
Yeah.
Then suddenly I call you and say, hey, have you read this? And you go, there's a video. And I knew immediately, five alarm fire. I turn on the video, and there I am, asking that Bill Murray question. What did I just see? What happened? What pushed the president to do what the New York Times is labeling a concession speech?
Joe, that was a terrific impression of me. Thank you for that. Yes, what we saw last night was a sort of an unexpected, in some ways, video. But I might argue that another Bill Murray movie applies. That's Groundhog Day, where we see the president amidst a crisis, and Charlottesville is a great example of this, speak something that does not condemn the actions of his supporters, does not condemn the violence, but rather almost encourages it. And only after 24 to 48 hours of immense pressure does he go the other way and finally give out a scripted remarks to try to bring down the temperature in face of criticism from Republicans and Democrats alike. Now, traditionally in the Trump administration, there's another turn that usually after the scripted act, he reverts back to his true self. We will see if that happens here in the next day or so when it comes to this, which is now, of course, the greatest crisis of the Trump presidency. But we'll just pull back real quick, Joe, and let you know how this came about. The remarkable 180 from Wednesday, when the president, in his tweets and in a video, told the protesters that he loved them, that they are special. There was no condemnation of the violence, of the riotous siege of the U.S. Capitol that indeed has claimed now several lives. He instead on Wednesday holed up in the West Wing at the private office, his private study off the Oval Office, watching the coverage, never once reaching out to Vice President Pence, who was in danger at the Capitol. He never picked up the phone to call him. He simply was angry that Pence had not done his bidding in terms of objecting to the certification of the Electoral College vote in Congress. But what's happened here is in the last 24 hours, this is an effort, this video from the president, to stave off the forces trying to oust him from office early. And it's two different tracks. We are hearing members of Congress, Democrats, House Speaker Pelosi, Minority Leader, soon to be Majority Leader Schumer, calling for impeachment again. Members of the House saying they want to vote on impeachment again, which would leave the president, of course, the first president ever to be impeached two times. We saw one of his allies, Lindsey Graham, and other Republicans say that they are also disturbed, outraged by the president, and said that all options are on the table, perhaps signaling that there wouldn't be enough votes in the Republican Senate to stave off a conviction this time around. We also have talk of the 25th Amendment. We've had two cabinet officials, DeVos and Chao, both resign in the last 24 hours out of protest. There is still no signal, though, that Vice President Pence would get behind a move, the 25th Amendment, to remove the president from office. And the talk on that has cooled slightly, we can report, in the next day, in the last 24 hours. But that is still out there. And of course, a final piece of this, the possibility of a criminal prosecution awaiting the president for inciting this violence. And that, more than anything, is what led him to deliver that video yesterday. Warnings from the White House counsel and others that he could be held liable for the violence at the Capitol. So what we saw last night, this scripted video, where though he does not mention President-elect Biden by name, he does not use the word victory or concede. That is what it was. For the first time on camera, he publicly bends to reality and acknowledges that there will be a new administration on January 20th. And at least in these words, he says he's committed to a peaceful transition of power.
All right. So anyone who thinks that this is all of a sudden some sort of last minute change on the president's part can look at where we stand right now. For example, with the coronavirus, where we are at 4,000 deaths now, record deaths in a day. The botched nature of this presidency should give anyone pause by letting him move forward unchecked in the next 12 days. Let's get into those calls from over 200 congressional lawmakers for President Trump to immediately leave office. Here is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
In calling for this seditious act, President has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people. I join the Senate Democratic leader in calling on the Vice President to remove this president by immediately invoking the 25th Amendment. If the Vice President and Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment. That is the overwhelming sentiment of my caucus.
Though impeachment is on the table, the speaker made clear that the preferred avenue for removal is invoking the 25th Amendment. In a video announcement, Adam Kinzinger of Illinois became the first Republican congressman to call for invoking the 25th Amendment. And outside of Washington, Maryland's Republican Governor Larry Hogan said, quote, "The country would be better off if Trump resigned or was removed." Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker, also a Republican, echoed that sentiment, saying he believes the president should, quote, "step down and the orderly transition of power should be led by Vice President Pence." Sources tell CNBC Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin have also discussed invoking the 25th Amendment, though with concerns the process would take too long. Here is the take yesterday from former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly.
The cabinet should meet and have a discussion. I don't think it'll happen, but I think the cabinet should meet and discuss this, because the behavior yesterday and the weeks and months before that has just been outrageous from the president. And what happened on Capitol Hill yesterday is a direct result of his poisoning the minds of people with the lies and the frauds.
If you were in the cabinet right now, would you vote to remove him from office?
Yes, I would.
Former Attorney General William Barr released a scathing response to the deadly mob violence at the U.S. Capitol. In a statement to the Associated Press, Barr said, in part, this: orchestrating a mob to pressure Congress is inexcusable. The president's conduct yesterday was a betrayal of his office and supporters. That's Bill Barr. Donald Trump has now lost two cabinet members and more than half a dozen administration officials. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos was the latest to hand in her resignation, which is effective today. Elaine Chao, Transportation Secretary and wife of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, also resigned on Thursday. They are two of the longest-serving cabinet members of the Trump administration. Nine other administration officials have resigned since Wednesday's attack on the Capitol. They come from the Justice Department, National Security, and from inside the White House. There is concern among some that more top officials could resign, including National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien and White House Counsel Pat Cipollone. The Washington Post reports at least four Republican senators, including Utah's Mike Lee, have been privately asking them to stay because there needs to be, quote, strong leadership at the White House in the 12 days that Trump has left in office.
Well, and Willie, we've been hearing calls on the editorial pages of the New York Times and the Washington Post for Donald Trump to step down. But even the Wall Street Journal editorial board, which too often has engaged in just mindless anti-Trumpism and playing to the cheap seats over the past 4 years. Even the Wall Street Journal editorial board is now saying it's time for Donald Trump to just leave.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal's got a new op-ed calling for President Trump to resign. The editorial board there writes this: if Mr. Trump wants to avoid a second impeachment, his best path would be to take personal responsibility and resign. This would be the cleanest solution, since it would immediately turn presidential duties over to Mr. Pence. We know an act of grace by Mr. Trump is not likely. In any case, this week has probably finished him as a serious political figure. He has cost Republicans the House, the White House, and now the Senate. Worse, he has betrayed his loyal supporters by lying to them about the election and the ability of Congress and Mr. Pence to overturn it. He has refused to accept the basic bargain of democracy, which is to accept the result, win or lose. It is best for everyone, himself included, if he goes away quietly. So, Casey Hunt, you've been talking to people on Capitol Hill, some of whom, including this morning on Way Too Early with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, talking about the possibility of impeachment. I think the 25th Amendment, most people agree, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is going to be difficult, if not impossible, because you need the vice president on board, and he is not on board, said to be not even entertaining the thought of the 25th Amendment. Is impeachment now, 12 days from the end of President Trump's term, even possible?
I do think it's possible, Willie. And I was just talking to Debbie Dingell, the congresswoman from Michigan, who is pretty close to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, about this possibility on Way Too Early. And she said, quote, I think Democrats are going to move forward with another impeachment. And that really stuck out to me. Pelosi obviously raised it at her news conference yesterday. That was coordinated with Chuck Schumer to try and send a public message to the Vice President Pence to say, please do this. Please send us a signal about whether you're going to invoke the 25th Amendment. And it seems like the signal that's been received is that, okay, that is not on the table. That is not going to happen. But I do think that, and we're still in the stages of reporting this out, but there What happened on Wednesday completely shifted the ground for all of the obvious reasons. But it seems as though there is confidence that there is enough opposition to this president, perhaps now among Senate Republicans, that if the House were to send those articles over, that we might see a different outcome. And I don't want to go too far down this road because, like I said, we're still reporting this out. But my sense sitting here this morning talking to you is that we have seen a potential groundswell that is significant enough. And listening to that Wall Street Journal editorial board comments, I think it really underscores that point and that reality that it's a realistic possibility that we could see it. Now, Dingell also told me, and we know it's obvious from looking at the calendar, that time is very short. And there are questions. Congress isn't supposed to come back into session until the inauguration. They've all gone home. So it's we got to figure out, or they have to figure out, what the logistics of that will look like. And I'm going to be reporting that out today to try to sort out how they would move forward with this process. But while we normally see these long extended hearings, I mean, that's not necessary. And if the House does, in fact, pass articles of impeachment, the Senate is required under the law to have a trial. So we could be seeing the beginnings of that, Willie.
Yeah, again, only 12 days left in the term. It's a lot of business to take care of in that short time. Sam Stein, everything we just laid out, everything we just heard from Casey, all of the resignations we just put forward there, Bill Barr speaking out, John Kelly speaking out, The Wall Street Journal, that all probably pushed Donald Trump to make that videotaped statement that was written for him last night. He feels the walls closing. He knows what's coming. He knows what's ahead of him. So what is going on inside the White House? Who is left at his side? Who's advising him? Who, in fact, pushed him out there to make that speech last night?
Right. Yeah. Good question. One thing I'd say is I think the threat of criminal prosecution is also playing a compelling role in getting Trump to make that statement. As to who's advising him, look, all our reporting suggests that it's an incredibly tight-knit group of aides who are among the most loyal who are sticking around. We have reporting that the White House is essentially a ghost town at this juncture. People are padding their resumes, trying to look for future employment, wondering if they should stick around to collect the work benefits or if they should leave in protest. You have high ranking aides who are leaving, which is just exacerbating the situation because they are leaving the loyalists in their wake. So it's an open question as to who is advising the president, whether the president's hearing much of it. Obviously, the video he put out suggests that he recognizes the gravity of the situation. But all this talk of the 25th Amendment, we have not been picking up much reporting that it's that serious. And when you see people like Elaine Chao and Betsy DeVos leave, the question becomes, why didn't they stay around? If they were so concerned about the situation, why didn't they stay around and potentially deal with it themselves, right? So those are the questions currently in the White House. There's 12 more days. There's a sense that anything could potentially happen, that no one actually knows where the next, what the next step is. And like I just said, the fact that it's the loyalists who are the last ones there is giving people on the Hill pause. I mean, that Mike Lee quote is very valid. Do you need people who have some ability to deliver hard truths to the president to stick around precisely so that they can deliver those hard truths?
Well, and there's zero trust the president is going to completely stick to what he said in his video yesterday. By the way, here is Ted Cruz, who had a huge part in all of this, also throwing President Trump under the bus yesterday. Take a look.
The president's language and rhetoric often goes too far. I think yesterday in particular, the president's language and rhetoric crossed a line, and it was reckless. I disagree with it. And I have disagreed with the president's language and rhetoric for the last 4 years and have said so many, many times. If you look to what I have said, you will not find me using the same language or rhetoric.
So that's...
Wait, he said that he's been standing up to the president for the past 4 years.
This man is pitiful. He's shameless and pitiful.
Scared now.
So let's move on from
him. But it's okay to attack his wife. It's okay to accuse his father of killing JFK, but
people make different choices in life.
Yeah, I guess they do.
Joe, question for you about Elaine Chao and the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, who resigned, perhaps in disgust with what's had. They must be so shocked.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be more? I know. It's amazing.
When Elaine Chao was standing next to Donald Trump when he was trying to do cleanup in Charlottesville, I mean, how could she have seen
people,
this coming?
I mean, really? You want to clean up your legacy now? Sorry.
Yeah,
way too late. But the bigger question is, I think they took the weaker way out. If they really wanted to do something for this country, they would have stayed in and helped invoke the 25th. Is this their lame way of being cowardly and avoiding being put on the spot to ask whether or not the president should be removed from office, which he should?
Yeah, you know, this is what, since I'm such an old man, this is what I've been telling White House people for years. And I've actually told some people inside the Trump administration for the past 4 years, you just think he's going to be around forever. He's not. He's going to leave Washington. He's going to go to Mar-a-Lago. He's going to be golfing around the world. He's going to be getting richer, as rich as he can. And you're going to be stuck in Washington, D.C., holding a resume, trying to figure out where you get your next job with your shattered reputation.
And
of course, that's a speech that I've given to people halfway through several administrations, as you know, Mika, who, when they're in the White House, they think they're going to be there forever.
Right.
And they just aren't. I mean, in this case, with Elaine Chao and Betsy DeVos, I don't know that they really thought through the whole 25th Amendment deal. I don't think that would have much of a chance of passing anyway. They just wanted to get away from him as quickly as possible. He's radioactive. Same thing with Ted Cruz. I do, though, David Drucker, I want to go to you. And yes, of course, this is not one of these ground noise issues where I say you got to separate the signal from the ground noise, as an old Navy pilot once told me. What happened 2 days ago obviously was extraordinarily important in the history of this country, a very dark day. At the same time, the news that's going to be impacting Washington, D.C. and lawmakers over the next 2 years from 2 days ago was that John Ossoff put Democrats in charge of the United States Senate, which means Marco Rubio is not going to be the chairman of the Intel Committee, which he's been planning to be over the past 2 months. He's going to be the ranking member. Lindsey Graham is not going to be the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. He's going to be the ranking member. Now, I was never in the minority. My guy elected four times was always in the majority. And every Republican I talked to said, boy, you don't ever want to be in the minority. It is horrible. And so you look at these people turning on Donald Trump. We're overlooking another massive development 2 days ago. Donald Trump just made 50 Republican senators, for the most part, irrelevant in their day-to-day lives as legislators.
Well, Joe, it certainly isn't as bad as being in the minority in the House, which may be about the worst job in America. Because at least in the Senate, everything runs by unanimous consent, and you still have the legislative filibuster, and nothing really happens without bipartisan support. But you're right in that most Republicans definitely believe, Republicans in the Senate, that the reason they lost two Georgia Senate seats, and think about that for a minute, for those of us that have been steeped in politics for the last generation, the Democrats now control two Georgia Senate seats after winning a pair of runoff elections. And so this is going to give Joe Biden a few headaches, but also a lot more room to maneuver. And it's going to leave Republicans, number one, unable to stop President-elect from getting the cabinet he wants. And through a process known as reconciliation, getting some of the fiscal policy that he wants, because you don't actually have to deal
with Harris, the vice president, frozen. With great ties. We'll get back to David in a second. He froze. I want to go to Casey Hunt, though, really quickly, and talking about the development on the Hill, which, again, we haven't talked much about. And if the riots hadn't happened 2 days ago, if insurrection against the United States hadn't happened 2 days ago, we would have been talking about the shocking development in the United States Senate. There are a lot of ways that that Democrats taking control are going to change things. But we are still looking at a United States Senate that's now with two Democrats from a pretty conservative state. We're going to have about 10 legislators that have all the incentive in the world to strike compromise, to pass moderate legislation, to be seen as people who get things done.
That's right, Joe. And there's going to be a lot of power in the middle of that conference, because it does, as David was talking about, it takes agreement to make anything happen in the U.S. Senate. And any single member can hold things up, can change the dynamic. And that means that if Joe Manchin wants to have a meeting with Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and some of these other Republicans who have shown a willingness to work with Democrats, that they may actually wield some significant power. And I think with Joe Biden in the White House, you know, this is the kind of environment that he thrived in when he was a member of the Senate. He is still a man of the United States Senate. He always will be, even from the White House. He loves it. And he was there for many years. You know this, Joe, better than anyone else. He, I think, will be willing to watch that process play out. I mean, the last years at the Capitol have been defined by Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell, two people who run the committees that get their guys elected. It has been all out campaign partisan warfare from the top, dictated from the top. And Chuck Schumer will have to make a decision. Is that how he wants to move forward? Or does he want to allow some space for these potential bipartisan agreements to happen? But I have a sense that the White House, that Joe Biden is going to want to potentially see a different way of doing business in the Senate. Now, he could run into some trouble from his left flank. Progressives are going to have more power now that the U.S. Senate is going to be in the hands of Democrats. If they are saying they don't like what's happening, they potentially could tie Nancy Pelosi's hands in the House, for example. Her majority is incredibly narrow. So this is going to be a tough needle to thread. But you're absolutely right that there are a lot more opportunities now with Democrats in charge of everything. Joe.
So David Drucker, one of the reasons why, let me get back to you, see if we have your Wi-Fi working again. One of the reasons why we've had such a divide in the United States Senate is because, you know, red states have been electing red senators, Republican senators. Blue states have been electing blue senators. But here we have on the Democratic side, Joe Manchin from West Virginia overwhelmingly went for Trump. Hickenlooper from a purple state. Kristen Sinema and Mike Kelly from a traditionally rock-solid Republican state. Ossoff and Warnock from traditionally Republican states. And then you've got Romney, Collins, Murkowski, Lindsey Graham, and others. You're going to have a hell of a center in the United States Senate that's going to be able to get things done. We saw it actually when they were talking about COVID relief and McConnell had said it wasn't going to happen. Manchin just kept going. And with Republicans, he got it done.
And so I think there's an opportunity for a lot of these lawmakers to work together in the Senate to force leadership's hand. What I'm interested to see, Joe, is how the upcoming 2022 elections, and it's not too early to talk about it because you have a divided Senate. Republicans are going to be eyeing a return to the majority with a Democrat in the White House. Democrats are going to have a lot of pressure from their left flank to deliver on bold, progressive legislation that not all Democrats are going to be in favor of. Chuck Schumer, still, who is going to be the Senate Majority Leader in just a few days, is going to have to look over his shoulder at the potential for a primary challenge, potentially from Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So there are going to be a lot of political pressures. And at the same time, you've got a Republican Party that, on the one hand, at least in Washington, it appears as though Trump's hold on them has been broken. But you still have a grassroots voting population among Republican voters who show up in primaries who we don't know that their opinion of President Trump has been changed. We know that they believed him when he said the election was stolen. And so they are going to be looking over their shoulder potentially heading into the 2022 primary. So there are all of these competing political forces, and we're really going to see
have to see how all of this shakes out before we really understand the long-term impact of both the Georgia Senate races and the insurrection and sort of storming of the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday.
Well, the acting U.S. Attorney General in D.C., Mike Sherwin, charged 55 people yesterday for their roles at the riot at the Capitol. NBC News has learned that charges range from unlawful entry to assault and theft. Eight suspects face gun charges, including one who allegedly had a military-style semi-automatic rifle and 11 Molotov cocktails. Sherwin says federal and local investigators are now searching social media for photos and video clips of suspects engaged in unlawful activity. The Department of Justice expects this search for suspects to last all year. The FBI issued a public call Wednesday night for information on suspects and has received more than 4,000 tips so far. So they're going to find these people, Willie.
And of course, this incident is raising serious questions about what went wrong with security at the Capitol on Wednesday. Defense Department officials said yesterday federal law enforcement and Washington, D.C. officials requested only modest support from the National Guard, not anticipating the day's large-scale violence. Pentagon officials said more troops were offered, but city officials turned them down. Joining us now with her reporting on this, NBC News correspondent Julia Ainsley. So, Julia, we've heard that the Pentagon offered help, that the National Guard was offered to the Capitol Police on Wednesday a couple of times during and after. What exactly was the request, and why would Capitol Police turn it down?
Well, yes, I mean, there was an offer for the National Guard to be involved. There were also offers from the Justice Department. DHS also was part of these discussions to try to get the vast array of federal agencies involved here. There are 32 law enforcement agencies just in this city. But instead, the Capitol Police turned down some of those offers. And also the mayor here sent out a letter to those agencies saying that she did not want federal support, that she did not request apart from Parks Department and Capitol Police and Secret Service, because she looked back to the mistakes made this summer. And you can remember those protests outside the White House where there were unidentified federal agents that were not coordinating with D.C. police. So she said, please do not send extra federal agents. And so instead, we did not have the support of the National Guard. You did not have Customs and Border Protection. You did not have people from Bureau of Prisons, SWAT teams, ATF, people who would normally be there to allow for manpower. And I should also emphasize, if they had more people there, they could have made arrests on the spot rather than what you're seeing now, where it could take them up to a year to track down all of these people.
Julia, let's underline this. So the D.C. police got several requests or several offers of help. Because, of course, we all knew that January 6th was going to be a tumultuous day. We saw it on social media. We saw it in mainstream media. And yet the Capitol Hill police rejected that help. And also the city of Washington, D.C. rejected that help as well.
That's right, Joe. And it's astounding because you and I, you know, we could see in open source media that this was an event that was building in its fervor and its numbers. But yesterday, the city said that they did not see any intelligence that could have indicated that we would be looking at a situation like this. It was really surprising. Same goes with Capitol Police. They told the Justice Department, please don't send people. We have this handled.
Oh my God.
And I've spoken to Justice Department officials who said that they watched in horror on Wednesday, wanting to send more people. By the time they were finally able to help, they were really doing the cleanup duty. They were going through trying to find out if there were IEDs, you know, shoved into cabinet drawers in the Capitol. Yeah. That's the level, that's the stage where they were finally brought in.
So, Willie, you know, during this, while we were watching this on TV, I'm sure you were saying the same thing that I was saying, which is, where the hell are the police? Where the hell is the National Guard? I mean, I said it yesterday morning on TV. Where the hell was You know, the D.C. police, where the hell was the National Guard? Where were all the other law enforcement agencies while these people were destroying the United States Capitol? It ends up that the Capitol Hill police leadership actually decided they didn't want that help. And I've got to say the same thing for the city of D.C. Hey, if anybody in Washington, D.C. thinks Washington, D.C.'s government thinks that it would be an infringement upon their powers to have the National Guard come and protect and defend Capitol grounds, you need to take a look at where you are and what city you govern, because this is the heart of American democracy. And if the National Guard can't protect and defend Capitol grounds, then what the hell do we have the National Guard for?
And as you look at those pictures that we just showed of rank and file members of the Capitol Police being completely overwhelmed, doing their best, one of them was killed. A 12-year veteran named Brian Sicknick was killed in all this. They were completely let down, as you say, by their leadership. By the way, the head of the Capitol Police tendered his resignation effective next week. So, I mean, look at this. This is a Capitol Hill officer. He's on his own. He's alone. He's got a baton that he drops and
this
has to pick up. He doesn't know the intentions of these people charging up the stairs after him. These men and women did their very best, but they were outgunned. They were overrun. And Julia Ainslie, this just doesn't add up. Washington knows how to do this. They proved it during the Black Lives Matter protest last summer when the National Guard was up on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and all over the city. Why would the Capitol Police, as you said, knowing what was coming, this was not a spontaneous gathering. This had been planned for weeks and weeks and weeks with the explicit intention of stopping this vote, which meant they were going to go to the Capitol. Why would the Capitol Police turn down extra help? What would be the harm in having the National Guard there with them?
Well, I think that they were just looking back at what had happened this summer. They were also probably looking at the decisions being made by the city. This is their territory. I'm not defending the decision they made. These are just the reasons we're seeing. We're also told that the intelligence did not indicate they would be seeing anything like this. Now, maybe that is a failure of that intelligence. Maybe it's surely a failure of leadership and not a failure on the part of those frontline officers who were put in a position that they just simply could not handle. But it seems that they just did not see this coming. And really, they were responding to the overwhelming public sentiment of the summer that federal officers were going too far. We saw that in the 60-day occupation of DHS officers in Portland. We saw that outside the White House this summer. What we were talking about after those protests were how federal law enforcement went too far. And so perhaps that was in their calculation. It was certainly in the calculation of the city. Perhaps that was in the calculation of Capitol Police. But, Willie, a reason why there's so little we can say about what the Capitol Police was thinking is because they do so little to communicate with the media. I'm sure Casey has understood this, too, in her position. They rarely do any interactions with the media. We saw one statement yesterday. As you know, the chief of police, Sund, did not even return calls to Nancy Pelosi before he resigned. They really keep themselves isolated and don't engage. So there are so many questions here that we just frankly don't have the answers to. So it's hard to get a window into their decision making.
Well, they need to stop being isolated. They need to be held accountable in all leadership, including the guy who rightly is being forced to step down, need to go and testify in front of the committees that fund them. And if there isn't full transparency, they all need to be fired. A Capitol Hill cop is dead because of their poor leadership. And please don't even start with, oh, the intelligence did. Look on social media.
Yeah.
We all know this. The president of the United States said it's going to be wild. You don't need an Ovaltine decoder ring to figure out what it's going to be wild on January the 6th. Mean be there. Mm-hmm. Will be wild. And then in the morning, the Capitol Hill cops or Donald Trump talking about taking it all up to Capitol Hill. There's Trump, January 6th, D.C. and D.C. It's going to be wild. Rudy Giuliani calling for, quote, combat justice. Don Trump Jr. saying, what? We're coming to get you. No excuses. No excuses whatsoever. Sam Stein, no excuses. And by the way, there is a happy medium for federal law enforcement officers. There is a happy medium between sending unmarked army paramilitary type personnel out to Portland and grabbing people off the street and throwing them into unmarked vans. There is a happy medium between that and setting the National Guard up along the perimeters of Capitol grounds. So violent insurrectionists inspired by Donald Trump Jr., Rudy Giuliani, and the President of the United States can't storm the Capitol.
Right. Look, just to put a button on this, the morning of and the day before Wednesday, when we were doing our editorial meetings and assigning our reporters, it was evident to the newsroom that this was coming. We put reporters on the ground knowing that they had been talking about online storming the Capitol, stopping lawmakers from getting in the Capitol. We knew that the action that day was not going to be near the White House on the Ellipse. It was going to be on Capitol Hill. So if we, mere reporters and editors, could understand that, I fail to comprehend how people whose job it is to anticipate this stuff fail to get it. So that's one thing. The second thing is, though, to your point, Joe, and maybe Casey could jump in here, which is we're going to run a risk, I think, of potentially overreacting to this event. If you know a big mob is going to happen on Capitol Hill, prepare for the mob. But what I'm worried about is that they're going to overcorrect and they're going to shut down the Capitol essentially for the future. And, you know, people who have worked on the Capitol, people who, you know, whose job it is to go there day to day, they know that one of the important features of that building is that it is accessible to the public. And there's already talk of making it sort of a quasi-military complex. That doesn't need to necessarily be the solution here. The solution is to have good intel and use that intel to ramp up security when you know that a mob is coming to put it under siege. So I don't know if Julia has any reporting on this or if Casey has any thoughts on this, but I am wondering, you know, is there going to be pushback? Is there going to be a debate over the right level of security going forward? Are we going to overcorrect for this mistake?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent question. Could this be an overcorrection? I think that is a debate that will happen. But I think more importantly, we need to look at the purview here and the fact that if anything happens on federal property anywhere around D.C., and there's a lot of federal property in D.C., there is you have over 30 law enforcement agencies that could respond to any of those problems. But the Capitol has always stayed the purview of the Capitol Police. So the question going forward is, do they lose any of those powers? What discussions go in ahead of time when there is a specifically Capitol threat? And I think that actually may be something the Congress will have to decide. But I do think we should be watching for the next issue. It could be at the inauguration. Let's see what the security looks like in the coming days.
Julia Ainslie, thank you so much. You and Ken Delanian, always great reporting. We appreciate it. A couple of things on what Sam said. First of all, you secure the location first. That's what matters. There's a constitution, and members of the House and the Senate have to be able to carry out their constitutional duties.
The woman was killed.
Without fear of being harmed. So they need to figure out how to secure the location first, and then they can open it up and let it serve as a museum or whatever they want to serve it as. Maybe people for the next 6 months until the Capitol Police have their you-know-what together, maybe for the next 6 months, people can come and walk through the Capitol when it's out of session. But there, we can't have a close call like this again. Members of the House and the Senate have to feel free to be able to walk around in the people's house, at the heart of American democracy, without having the risk of them facing bodily harm or ever having to go hide in closets again because they fear for their lives from mobs. So that's the first thing. Second thing, Willie Geist, regarding Sam Stein, I don't know if you know it or not, but I had no idea he was going to work for Politico. But when I did, I did something that I've never done before. Everybody knows what you and I invest in, right?
Well, yeah.
Off-track betting.
Yeah, scratch-off
the
tickets.
Dogs.
Yeah, off-track betting.
Scratch-off
yeah.
tickets. Mm-hmm. These are it is a diversified portfolio. Scratch-off tickets, the dogs, OTV. But the second I heard that Sam Stein was going to Politico, I took all of our winnings, right, from the dog track over the last 6 days. We do it every day, by the way. And I piled it all on Politico. And let me just tell you something. I've made a lot of money on the back of Sam Stein. A lot of money. That guy, I mean, that institution, it's humming now, Sam. We're really excited. Straight from prep school to Politico. Oh. That's pretty good.
Oh, no.
You never lose investing
clearly
in Sam Stein.
Clearly, this is the most important news of the week. Yeah, this is the most important news of the week, definitely, is my new job. Thank you.
Sam, congratulations.
So Sam, let me ask you really quickly. Congratulations. Sure. What's the worst thing that's happened to you since you've been at Politico?
Well, I'm living it right now, so.
And now you know why we love having Sam Stein on. All right.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.